Greetings and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shirim and Daf Yomi. My name is Yitzchak Yat Shalom. We're now in the beginning of the second parak of Masechet Sanhedrin, which is of, as I mentioned, on the two Mishnah, and the second at the second Mishnah judge, and can be with the wife gets chalitzo. It's not allowed to marry it. Let's say, mate. Let's say the ally walking openly, he's in walking openly, he's in a vote, a regular city, in a vote, a regular city, he can be by Novin Ha'ami, by Novin Ha'ami, by Novin Ha'ami. And of course, he didn't go to Mario, the Sudat Havra, he reclined on a bench. Shah is far more famous, and then adorn if the Kohen cuts a bench, nor be judged. He's accidentally he violated mitzvah. It's like a regular person. Going there, and in case the Kohen Gadol predeceases him, he can then go home, then maybe he goes to Galut. The late Takana B'chazara lo legally. But if somebody does not have such a possible Takana, because he is the Kohen Gadol, therefore, the only time he could leave is when he dies, and then it's too late to leave. Maybe he doesn't go into Galut at all. Right? Therefore, I need the Brayta to teach me that he does go into Galut. Did not, as we have the following Mishnah. Haorei Kohen Gadol, or Kohen Gadol Sharagat HaNefesh, if somebody himself kills the Kohen Gadol, or if the Kohen Gadol himself kills someone, then Eino Yotze Misham Leolam, he can never leave. Because evidently the rule of leaving when the Kohen Gadol dies is determined by who the Kohen Gadol was at the time of the killing, the inadvertent killing. And so therefore, if you kill a Kohen Gadol, there is no Kohen Gadol at that moment to then subsequently die that will liberate you. Or if you yourself are the Kohen Gadol who killed somebody inadvertently, then there is no death of a Kohen Gadol that's going to let you go. So I might think, emalo legally, that you shouldn't go into Irmiklat at all, because it all depends on that, kamash malan, that you do go. So the Braita is there to teach you that the Kohen Gadol does go into Galut, and that's why our Mishnah had to say, Kohen Gadol daninoto. Daninoto means even for Irmiklat. So indeed, that's such a good argument. Why don't we say that a Kohen Gadol cannot go to Galut because of that problem? The Pasuk, remember, Irmiklat is in three parashot. It's mentioned in Mishpatim briefly. And it's mentioned in two large parashot, in Parashat Mas'eh, at the end of Bamidbar, and in Parashat Shoftim. In Parashat Shoftim, it says that the Irmiklat are set up. Lanus Shama Kol Rotzeach. Any killer should be able to go there. Afilu Kohen Gadol b'mashma, even a Kohen Gadol, anybody who kills inadvertently can go there. And of course, remember, the Irmiklat serve two functions which are somewhat parallel but somewhat opposite. One function is primarily as miklat, as a way to save you from the blood relative. So if a Kohen Gadol kills somebody by accident and the blood relative is steamed up, he's got to go somewhere to save himself. So he's got the Irmiklat. The second point is that you have to go to Irmiklat, and that's maglinoto. We force him to go into exile there if he killed somebody, because, of course, he needs the kapara for having killed somebody. Okay, the rest of the brayta said something very strange. Over alase ve'alotase. So, logo sagit lovar. What does that mean? He has to violate mitzvot? Well, that's a bizarre thing. Hachi kamar im avar alase ve'alotase. Okay, do the chol davarav. So we modify the language of the brayta. Not, it doesn't mean that he does or should violate Aseh and Lotaseh. That's, of course, bizarre. But rather, if he violates it, Aseh and Lotaseh, he's judged like a regular person. So Pshita, obviously, if he doesn't put on tefillin, or if he wears shatnez, not as big deikun or something, or eats nevela, obviously he's judged. Saka daita chamena, I would have thought the following. Ho iltanan ein dani lotashev lotan v'yashek rav lot kohen gadol al pi beitin shel shivim echad. Since I learned in the first parak that the Kohen Gadol's judgments always happen in front of beitin agadol, v'yamar v'ada barahava kol rav gadol yaviu elacha. Remember, in the first parak we learned the drasha that supported that, which is in Yitro's advice to Moshe. He says, all of the great things or the great matters are brought to you. And the drasha is devarav shel gadol, matters involving the important person, which Melech Kohen Gadol, Eima Koldvarav Shel Gadol, I might think anything involving him goes to the Beit Din HaGadol. We saw this also in the first parak, Kamash Malan, that if he violates Malach HaNyantiv, or if he has a machlok with somebody about a halva, that goes to a regular court. Why indeed doesn't it go to 71? So Miktiv Divrei Gadol. It doesn't say the matters of a Gadol. Hadavar HaGadol. The great matter, meaning Davar Gadol Mamash. So in other words, a Kohen Gadol only rises to the point of needing a Beit Din of 71 if it's a great matter like execution. So he cannot be executed in front of a Beit Din of 23. That's to be judged by a Beit Din of 71. But if it's a regular case involving that would normally take three, then Kohen Gadol has that also. And that's what the Braita meant, Harei Uken Yot L'chol Dvarav, meaning in the context of a violation of Haseh or Lotaseh. Okay, Me'id u'midinoto, back in the Mishnah said that a Kohen Gadol testifies, and they can testify about him. Me'id, can he really testify? V'hatanya, take a look at this. Or must he testify? Me'id often means, it doesn't just mean that we accept him as a witness, but that he has an obligation to go testify, such that he's liable, and we can administer Shavuot Ha'idut if he doesn't do it. V'hatanya, we have the famous Braita in the context of Hashavat Avedah that says, should you see the ox or the lamb of your fellow and you think to look away, v'italamta mehem, say, don't look away, take him. Why does it say it in that way, v'italamta? We saw this in Bab Metzia, pamim shatam italem, pamim she'iatam italem. Sometimes you're allowed to look away. Right? The Torah words it that way for that reason. Haketzad. Kohen v'beit hakvarot. Let's say you're a Kohen, and the guy's animal's walking around the cemetery, which means you can't go in and get it. Zaken v'nal fikvodo, or you're an elder, or a member of the Beit Din, or something, and schlepping this animal through the streets is below your dignity. Or you're standing there with another buddy, and you're doing serious work, and he's lolling around. Then, therefore, you don't have to do Hashavat Aveda. Let the other guy do it. And so this, we should apply the same thing to Edut. That other people should come and testify. You're a Kohen Gadol. It's not appropriate for you to come to the Beit Din. So Rav Yosef Me'id LaMelech. Rav Yosef said only in a case where the king is on trial. Then you testify. V'hadnan lo dan v'lo daninoto. But wait a second. In the next Mishnah we learned that a Kohen Gadol can't be judged. A Melech can't be judged. If a Melech can't be judged, so what is the case where the Kohen Gadol is coming to testify? Lo me'id v'lo medinoto, and we can't testify about the melech. So Elam Rabbi Zera me'id levan melech. He said, no, okay, come testify about the crown prince. So Ben Melech Hedyot, who are we talking about? He's a regular guy. Ben Melech has no special position in the community. So the Kohen Gadol testifying for him is no different than anybody else, and we should apply vitalamta. Elam me'id b'fnei ha-melech. It means if the king is present, then the Kohen Gadol will come and testify. V'ain Moshe ben Melech ha-Sanhedrin, but we have a rule that we don't put the king on the Sanhedrin. So the answer is Shem Yakor to Kohen Gadol Atavyativ. It's a very interesting cycle. The Kohen Gadol knows testimony. So what do? In order to make sure the Kohen Gadol can come and feel comfortable, we put the king temporarily on the Sanhedrin. The Kohen Gadol now comes and testifies. He's comfortable being there because the Melech is present. The Melech has made him comfortable, but the Melech can't be part of the Sanhedrin. So what do? Mekable niale the sadute. We accept his testimony. Kai huva azel ma'inale anan medine. What happens? The Melech gets up and leaves. The Kohen Gadol leaves because he testified. And then we, the rest of us, sit down and we process it out. So in other words, if the Kohen Gadol knows testimony, the way to set it up is we temporarily have the Melech sit as pro tem on the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin then judges the case. Then the Kohen Gadol, who's finished testifying, leaves. The Melech can get up and leave, and the rest of the Sanhedrin then deals with that testimony. Okay, back in the previous statement, we said Gufa ein Moshe ben Melech haSanhedrin. We don't have a king sit on the Sanhedrin. And further in that Braita, Velo Melech haKohen Gadol bibur shana. Neither a Melech or a Kohen Gadol can be involved in the din of ibur shana. So Melech haSanhedrin, why don't we have a king sit on the Sanhedrin? Dichtiv lo tane al riv, the pasuk that we saw several times in the first parak, do not respond to a suit, as it were. But the drasha is lo ta'ana al rav. That's because the word riv is written chaser. And so therefore, you could read it lo ta'ana al rav. You don't respond to the great one. Meaning, if the melech says something, you can't disagree with him. Therefore, the melech can't be part of the Sanhedrin. You got to have people on the Sanhedrin that other members of the Sanhedrin can disagree with. Now, lo melech ha-kohen gadol bibur shana. Why can a melech nor a kohen gadol be involved in the deliberations of the members of the Beit Din for Ibur Shana? because they have a vested interest. Melech mishum afsanya, because the king has to pay his army every month. And if they add a month to the year, then that's going to cost him. So he's going to have a vested interest in not being ma'aber tashana. Kohen Gadol mishum tzinan. The Kohen Gadol has the same problem because he's going to be walking around barefoot and going into the mikveh so many times and changing clothes on Yom Kippur. And if we're ma'aber tashana, Yom Kippur will be later in the season and he's going to be colder. So he's going to again have a vested interest in not doing it. So Amar of Papa. Papa says from this, Shvamina shata bata yarcha azli. So Rav Papa says something that to us is fairly obvious, which is that the year follows the months, meaning that if we have a Shana Mu'uberet, then Tishrei will now be a colder month because Tishrei will be in what we'll call October instead of September. So Eini, is that really true? V'hana hanach shlosha ro'e bakar dahavu kaimi. There were three herdsmen over there. Shamina Rabbanan dekamri, and the rabbis heard them saying the following. Chanamar im bachir v'lakish kachada yinatz. Dein hu adar, which means that if the early stuff that grows and the later stuff that grows are both blossoming, then that truly is the real Adar. That's what they heard. The rabbis heard these herdsmen saying it. Vim lav date late dein adar, and if not, then this is not the real Adar. In other words, this is now later in the season. Chanamar im tor bitzfar bitla gimut. So then they heard another guy saying, and there's another siman of saying this is really the proper season for Adar. He says, if the shore in the it's very cold in the morning, so that the ox would die of snow. It's kind of an aphorism. But in the afternoon with Tihara, he would sleep underneath the tree, and he would then rub his pelt against it because he's hot, then that's really Adar. In other words, in Nisan it's hot all the time, and Shvat it's cold all the time. Adar is the season when it's cold in the morning but warm in the afternoon. And V'chanamar, and the third one said, V'imla v'leitan Adar, V'chanamar im kidum takif l'chada yehe, So the third one said that if the eastern, a very strong eastern wind is, if you have a strong eastern wind, and nonetheless, the wind, the air that you exhale, comes out and kind of pushes it away, then that's Adar. And if not, then not. And then what happened is that in that particular year, there were no such simanim. In other words, they were saying this in, let's say, February. And they said, if you see these kind of things, they overheard them saying these sort of things, then it's really the Adar, and if not, not. And what happened is none of those things were happening. The wind was stronger, and it was colder, and the late blossoming things were not blossoming yet. And the rabbis were ma'aber tashana, means the rabbis added another month to that year. In other words, that the season does not really bring with it the simanim, but it's really calling it Adar that's going to do that, which is very strange. So the answer is v'tisper abonar avata samuch. But think about it. That story doesn't make sense, because do you think the rabbis are really relying on these shepherds, on these herdsmen? Ela Rabbanan Chushbenayu Samuch. They had their own calculation, and that's why they made the Ibur Shana. And we went through a long sugi of that in the middle of the first parak. For Oy Bakar, Yistay Yehudim, Yistay Miltayu. It just happened to be that what they said coincided with the statement, and so the it was a coincidence that that these statements were made around the orientation of the year. Okay, Choletz v'Choltzin. We said that a Kohen Gadol gives chalitza, we give chalitza to his wife, he dies, and but he does not do yibum. Now, kapasik v'tani lo shtamina yirusin v'lo shtamina yirusin. The Mishnah did not distinguish. It made it one fiat, which is that whether or not the Kohen Gadol's brother was betrothed or married to that girl, nonetheless, the Kohen Gadol does not do yibum. The reason I understand that a Kohen Gadol does not do Yibum if his brother was actually married, because there's an Aseh of Betula and a Lotaseh of Almana. Because after all, if she was already married to his brother, she already had biyah with him, and she's not a betula. Ve'ein aseh, the aseh of yibum is dochalot aseh v'aseh. This we dealt with in the first parak of Yevamot. And the aseh of yibum cannot be docha the lav of almana along with the aseh of betula. Elamina erusin, but if she was only betrothed, then amai, yavo aseh v'yidchalot aseh. Why should he not do yibum with the Kohen Gadol, do yibum with his dead brother's fiance? Because after all, the aseh of yibum should be docha the lot aseh of almana, and there's no corresponding aseh of betula because she wasn't married yet. The answer is gzera birishona to be yoshniya. It's the same reason that a regular Kohen does not do yibum with a grusha or even a chalutza. The reason that a man does not do yibum with a mamzeret if his brother married a mamzeret, because even though that first bia really would be aseh dochalot aseh, but the second bia wouldn't be. The first bia is the bia of mitzvah, and therefore the Kohen Gadol we can't allow him because of bia shnia. Tanya miachi im kidmu baalu bia rishona kanu vaso lekaman bia shnia. If any of these lot aseh, the people who have a relationship that's involved in a lav, go ahead and do yibum, the yibum is now valid, and now, instead of chalitza, they have to give a get. But you're not allowed to stay married because of biyashniya, and do have to give the get. Okay, the end of the Mishnah said that if a Kohen Gadol has a relative die, then the machloket, Rabbi Yehuda Meir, said he leaves the mikdash and follows sort of in a duck and weave fashion, so that at no point is he present when the beer is there. And Rabbi Yehuda says he doesn't leave at all. Tana Rabbanan, umina mikdash lo yitze. Rav Meir says, "Lo yitzei imahen." He doesn't go with them. Aval yotzeihu achareihen. He follows from a distance. Ketzad nechsin v'nigla nigla v'hunechse. That's exactly like the Mishnah said. Yotzei petach shara'ir. That's Rav Meir. Now, shaper kamer Yehuda. The fact is, Rav Yehuda's response to Rav Meir is good. He said, "Mina mikdash lo yitzei." So, how does Rav Meir answer that? So, Malach Rav Meir, this is what he would answer. Ihachi leveiton amilo. According to you, Rav Yehuda, he should never leave his house and leave the Beit HaMikdash. He can't ever leave. Mikdash lo yitzei. If you read that literally, that means the minute he's Kohen Gadol, he's sequestered there forever. And we know that he goes to his house. We know that from the description in Yoma. We just know from regular life that Kohen Gadol just has a quasi-normal life. Halachi kamar. This is what Rameir said back. Mikdash lo yitzei means mikdushato lo yitzei. Because the Torah says that in the context of the distinction between a Kohen Gadol and a Kohen Hediot, relative to his, sorry for the pun, his dead relatives, and going to the funeral. A Kohen is mitameh, laviv, ulimo, etc. But a Kohen Gadol min hamikdash lo yitzei. The way you interpret it is, min mikdushato lo yitzei. He should never violate his sanctity for anybody, of course, with the one famous exception of mit mitzvah. The Kohen di la hakeira, so Rameir says, since he's acting in such a strange fashion, they're walking and he's standing behind the wall, they go behind the wall and he walks, etc., lo ati the minga, he's not going to touch the dead body. Everybody's recognizing this distinction here, and therefore it won't happen. Rabbi Yehuda says, aga merare dilma mikri va'ati v'naga. Maybe because he's so bitter, he'll forget about what's going on. He's so upset because of the death, and he will touch the body. So therefore, we are concerned. All right. The rest of the Mishnah said shumen achem. So when he comforts others, and we have the whole system there. Tana Rabbanan, kishuhu over bashura lenachem et achirim. When he walks through the line to menachem others, which we're going to see what that means, sgan, his sgan means the second into the Kohen Gadol, umashuach she'avar means if there was a Kohen who was nimshach to be Kohen Gadol, let's say as replacement of Yom Kippur, and now he is in limbo, or he's the retired Kohen Gadol. Then he walks, he and the assistant walk on his right side. V'rosh Beit Av, the head of the Beit Din, v'avelim, and the mourners, v'chol ha'am mismalo, they're on his left side. Uchshuhu omed b'shura, when he's standing in the row, u'mitnachem yachim, this sounds different than our practice, because our practice, in most of our kilot, except for the temanim, is that the avelim walk through and the menachemim stand still. Here you see the opposite. When he's standing still as a person getting comforted, Sgan mimino, the assistant is to his right side, it's all part of the protocol, Rosh Beit Av, Cholam Yismalo, and the head of the Beit Din, and all of the people who are passing by are on his left. Of Mashuach Shavar, notice who's missing from this picture. When he is giving comfort, we have his emeritus with him. But when he is being comforted, Mashuach Shavar Lo Ati Gabei, the old Kohen Gadol doesn't come to him. Why? My taima, chal shadate. He might become very upset. Sabar kachadi be that they're laughing at me of the fact that he's now the focus of attention, laughing at me that I'm kind of the old Kohen Gadol put out to pasture. So we don't have him be there. When he's comforting, he can come along as assistant. Amar Papa Shmamina Mehamat Nitalat. From this Braita, we can infer three things. Shmamina, first of all, Hainu Skan, Hainu Mamuna. That Skan and Mamuna mean the same thing, because Mamuna in the Mishnah and Skan here played the same role, being on his right side. Ushmamina Avelim Omdin V'chol Amovrim. We also hear that the proper practice is for the Avelim to stand still and the comforters to pass by. Ushmamina Avelim L'smol HaMenachamin Hein Omdin. That the mourners are always to the left of those who comfort, as you described here. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. Pershanayu Avelim Omdin. The original practice was, as we saw, that the Avelim stand still, V'chol Am Ovrin, and everybody passes them. And let's now find out why our practice, again, in almost all Kehilot, is the opposite of that, where the Avelim walk through. Hayush Shtei Mishpachot Rishalayim. There were two families in Rishalayim, Mitgarot Zu Bezu. They had a big fight. Zot Omeret Ani Overet Chila. Vezot Omeret Ani Overet Chila. They had a death in the family, each of them, at the same time. So each family said, I'm going to go first. Hitkinu She'am Omdin V'Avelim Ovrim. So they made a new rule, which is, sorry, there were two families who came to comfort, and each family said, we're going to come first. And it became a big fight. So the rabbis changed the rule, and they said that everybody stands still, where you stand, wherever you are, and the Avelim walk through. Okay. Amar Rabbi Bar Abba, Hechzir Rabbi Yossi to the Varli Yoshno Tzipori. In Tzipori, Rabbi Yossi, who is the rabbi of Tzipori, put it back to the proper way. Shu Avelim Omdin V'cholam Ovrim. That's the way it should be. The Avelim are standing still, and the people are walking past. And that's something that could be accomplished because he told the families to just stop fighting, or there were no families like that there, or whatever it might be. We hear another takon of Rabbi Yossi in Tzipori. Not to have a woman walking in the shuk and having her kid, a little baby, trailing behind her. So Rashi fills it in that there was a story that there was a woman who was walking like that and some lowlifes grabbed the kid, kidnapped the kid, and told the woman that unless she agrees to have Bia with them, they won't let the kid go, and it became obviously a tragedy. And so they made this rule that you've got to keep your kid close to you and not allow things like that to happen. That if women are in a privy, they should talk to each other. And one of them should stand outside, or if they're next to each other, they should talk to each other. Because people will hear them talking, and if a man comes, he'll know that there are women there, he'll stay away. If he doesn't know that, he might walk in and end up being alone with a woman in a compromised position, and what may happen. Manasha bar Aza, bar Avat. She'ili that Rabbi Yoshia Rabba Beveit Almin Dehutzal. We go back to the issues of comforting mourners. I asked Rabbi Yoshia at the cemetery in Hutzal, which is an important town in Bavel. V'amarli in Shura Pchuta Me'asura B'nei Adam. A Shura needs at least 10 people. V'ein Avilim Min Aminyan. This goes back to the Sugyan Ketubot. Avilim do not count towards those 10. You need 10 comforters. Bein Sha'avilim Omdin V'chol Am Ovrim. Bein Sha'avilim Ovrim V'chol Am Omdin. Whether either practice of who's walking and who's standing, right? You need to have 10. Kishuhumi Nachem, the end of the Mishnah said that when the Kohen Gadol gets Nechama from others, then they say Anu Kaparatcha, etc. Ibarilu, Kiminachem hu achrini hechi amarlu. What does he say when he comforts others? When they comfort him, they say Anu Kaparatcha, he says back to Tabachu ben Hashamayim. Toshma v'hu omer tit nachamu. He says, you be comforted. Now, hechidami ilam ekim nachami achrini d'day. That's when other people comfort him. Amalu iu to nachamu. He says to them, "You should be comforted." Nachasha karami lehu. He's like throwing a curse at them, that you'll soon be mourning and you'll be comforted. Ella kim nachem lachrini amalu to nachamu. So now we know that's what he says when he comforts others. Tit nachamu, and when they comfort him, they say anu kaparatcha, and he says tit parchu. Shma mina. Okay, that's the end of the analysis of the first Mishnah. As I mentioned, in the next podcast, we are going to go back and look at the second Mishnah about the Melech, and then go straight to this Gemara on Daf Yutet and pick it up at this point. In the meantime, everybody should have a wonderful day.